Welcome back to another episode of the Front Page Football Podcast. I am your usual host, Christian Marchetti, and it is currently about 10:30 p.m. on a Monday night, and I am recording a podcast that is probably borderline psychotic. But anyway, this is the time we're doing it, I guess. And it is the A-League Men, I guess, review or thoughts, or I don't even know what to call it, the Monday pod, which by the time you see this will be Tuesday. Wrapping up this long weekend of A-League action, we had some very interesting results, I think we learned a bit about quite a few teams over the weekend. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that. So strap yourselves in, I guess. Hopefully, you know, it's 10:30, so hopefully I'm not going to be here for too long. But you never know. We are getting into the business end. We've got a couple of catch-up games coming up tonight. The Mariners are playing Melbourne City on Wednesday night. You've got Perth and Sydney FC. Adelaide also have to catch up a game against Western United at some point. So a couple of teams are still on 22 games. Most teams are on 23. So we're really, realistically, everyone's kind of pretty much got four or five games left to go until we hit the finals. So it really is a business end. I'm going to go through pretty much all the games. And as I usually do, I'm not really just kind of reviewing what happened in the game and stuff, but actually kind of my takeaways, what I noticed. And in some of these cases, I might just be talking about one player, to be honest with you. And I'm actually going to finish this podcast today with power rankings for the A-League at the moment. So, yeah, I thought I'd do that kind of heading into the finals as well, because I don't think the table right now is actually reflecting where some of these teams are at. Most notably Sydney FC, who I've got a lot of praise to shower with, but we'll get to that shortly. Okay. Let's start with Adelaide United and Western United on Friday. I was there. Nestor Iwankunda just kind of said, "Fuck this! I'm just going to basically take this game by the scruff of the neck and score a hat trick, and kind of shut, you know, quite a few people up. I think who have a lot of doubts about Nestori and where he can get to and what his ceiling is, and you know he's just gonna come back to Australia in 2 years and X, Y, and Z, Bayern's not gonna work out, you know, all that sort of stuff, which you know everyone's entitled to, of course. I'm gonna get up some stuff though, because I'm actually in the process of working on a piece on Nestor at the moment, which hopefully will be out in a couple of days, time permitting. But main thing with Nestor, so scores a hat trick, first goal, unbelievable strike. The ball striking ability of this kid is just fucking incredible. Like, we've never seen anything like that. I know maybe people talk about Mark Viduka and stuff. Look, I wasn't alive, or I was very young when these types of players were coming out, so I'm not going to speak to that. But in my lifetime, I've never seen a kid be able to strike a ball this hard. It's actually incredible, the power that he can generate. So that first goal was a nice reminder of that. Second goal, Western caught in transition. Really poor from them, to be honest. Like, it's a straight ball by Mork. Very easy. You just leave Nestor one out with one defender. Like, you know, it's always going to be one result. Used his right, goes under the keeper. And then the third one was probably, honestly, the best goal, to be honest with you, for me. Because, as I'm going to talk about in a moment, it kind of showed how much he is starting to evolve, I think, as an overall footballer, as a more well-rounded footballer, because gets the ball, drives, looks like, okay, yeah, he's going to touch the ball to his right and smash it, because that's what he does, but actually notices the run of Mork. Great run by Stefan Mork, who, by the way, best game for me in Adelaide United shirt since he returned to the club, I thought, on Friday. Great little run, great little cross as well by Mork, but Nestor crucially passes it and he continues his run. You know, it's a two-action play, right? It's not just the kind of, I'm going to get the ball, I'm going to drive, and then I'm going to shoot from like 30 yards, and if it gets blocked or something, then I'm going to put my hands up in the air. No. It was, everything about what he did on Friday was decisive. There was purpose about it, and for me, that was really big to watch for him. But more to the point, so I went into some stats with him, and I went to have a look at, because the eye test with him at the moment, if you've really been paying attention, this game, against Western, the game against the Jets as well, and even, you know, the game against Victory a little bit. Like, if you pay attention, you would have noticed, like, it feels like he's less erratic at the moment. Like, it doesn't feel like it's kind of go on, get the ball. Like I just mentioned there, go on, get the ball, drive the defender, you know, get into your 1v1 stuff. If you see an opportunity to shoot, just shoot. There actually seems like there's more of an emphasis on him actually being a team player, to be honest with you. I'm not saying Nesta's, you know, not been a team player before, but I do think he before, like, and he still is, like, we're talking about an 18-year-old player who kind of is just focusing on his own game, right? Because he's trying to get better and he's trying to show what he can do on a week in, week out basis. But I really think in these last few weeks, what we're seeing from him is that I think he's slowly starting to get the message of, you know, that can he elevate the players around him, right? Because he's only 18, but he can actually do that in this team. And that's it's kind of actually remarkable in itself with him, because we speak, you know, we've been talking a lot, and me and Antonis did a podcast recently where we spoke about Adelaide and we talked about Craig Goodwin and how he was the real game changer for them. And Nesta is their game changer. The problem is that he's 18 years old, so he's not going to be able to change every single game. But if he can learn to release the ball a bit more like he did on Friday, if he can learn to it's not really so much just release the ball, it's just making the right decision, right? Because there will be times, and Carl Veer even mentioned, and I asked him in the press conference after on Friday, that there will be times where he should be selfish, right? So, you know, but the stats behind it. So I looked at three key metrics with him. So there was passing accuracy, and actually passes attempted, dribbles attempted, and dribbles, you know, and how many of those completed. And the main thing with him, though, is possession lost. Now, there were some stats in the first five games of the season where it's kind of insane, like the possession loss stuff. So let me go through it. So the first five games, so Nesta, bar one of these, which was actually Western near the start of the season because he was suspended of this game, so he played round one, round two, round three, round five, and round six. He started all those games. So Mariners, the first game of the season, he lost possession 18 times in that game. City, round two, 14 times. Round three against Victory, 21 times. Round five, only 9 times. That was against Western. He missed the game before that. I'm not too sure who that was against off the top of my head. But 9 times there, and then round six against MacArthur, 22 times. So now, obviously, with all these stats that I'm talking about, like, there's always kind of an argument against it. Like, you can say, well, maybe it's he's losing the ball up because he's trying different things. He's trying to be creative. Yeah, of course. Don't get me wrong. But, like, to lose the ball 20-plus times in a match, like, I don't really care how much things you're trying. You're probably not, you know, making the right decision every time you get the ball. So, you look at recently, just in that stat, so against the Wanderers, so this is round 18 against the Wanderers, he lost the ball 17 times as a sub, so that was pretty bad. Then those kind of the four games after that have been slow improvement. So round 19 against Wellington was a sub, but only lost the ball 3 times in that game. Round 20 against Victory, lost it 11 times, okay, but it's a little bit lower. Against the Jets, 14 times, okay, but then on Friday he only lost it 7 times. So it's just a little thing that you can kind of notice. Okay, he's a bit more efficient, and even some other metrics. So, for example, even against Wellington, that round 19 game where he was a sub, Adelaide lost that 3-2 in Wellington, he actually had 100% pass accuracy in that game from 11 passes. Now, okay, well, it's only 11 passes. He's not a midfielder, whatever. But, you know, he was really efficient in that game. He only lost the ball 3 times. He had 1 successful dribble from 1 attempted, and he had 100% pass accuracy. So, slowly, he is becoming a bit more efficient, in my opinion. And I actually think we've said before, like, how needs to get to Germany, he'll make his mistakes, then he'll start learning. I actually think he's slowly starting to learn now, and the more he can learn here before he goes there, the better, right? So slowly he's getting better. So I did basically the average out from those first five games, the last five games on those metrics. So last five games, I'll start with the first five games. He actually, in the first five games of the season, only had a 39% dribble success rate, which from an average of 5 attempted per game. Now, when you watch him, like, you'd think, oh, like, more often than not, he's beating his player. But when you actually go the first five games of the season, more often than not, he was losing 1v1s. And he was actually quite easy to defend in some cases, right? And he was losing the ball an average of 17 times a game. Now, you look at those two stats in the last five games, he's up to a 66% dribble success rate. Good. And that's on less attempts, which means he's sharing the ball more. And he's only losing the ball 10 times per game, which isn't too bad for a player who is going to take risks when he gets the ball. That's just a reality. So you can't expect him to only lose the ball 3 times a game. Like, it's just not going to happen, right? And in fact, if anyone can point out the A-League player to me who loses the ball less than 5 times a game, like, you know, you'd be very hard-pressed to find it, right? So a few things there with him that I just wanted to point out, because you look a little bit deeper into it, and he is slowly getting better as well. Another thing was the mental side with him, which has been a big talking point ever since, really, that victory red card at the start of the season. And there was a moment on Friday where he got booked, wasn't the best tackle, definitely a yellow, wasn't a red in my opinion, but definitely a yellow. I can't remember who he tackled off the top of my head, but Michael Roos came over, and if anyone's been watching Michael Roos in recent weeks for Western, he's a shithouse, right? He's gonna be the antagonizer. He's gonna pick out the guy on the other team who's gonna be, you know, maybe likely to get sent off. If you go back to when they played the Wanderers, he was, you know, in Marcelo's ear all game. You could see it. And in this game, he came over and he was ushering Nestor off the pitch, as if to kind of say, you know, you're off, right? That's the horrible tackle. Obviously, he wasn't sent off. But maybe the Nestor of the first 5 rounds of the season goes, what the fuck are you doing, man? And reacts, and they get into it, and then he reacts, and who knows, maybe a yellow card gets ugly, and it gets upgraded to a red, you know, in the matter of 3 seconds. Shit like that can happen. But he actually just walked away. And he didn't really have to get ushered by anyone away from it either. He just walked away. And for me, that was a real good sign. Good sign of just mentally making sure your head switched on, not getting into any of that stuff, because you know that your team needs you. So, look, I think all round, it was magic. It was magic, what we saw from Erin Kundo on Friday. So, you know, fantastic to see. One other thing with him, which I might write about too. If you're out there right now and you're watching Nestor Erin Kundo and you're basically, what's the kind of word I'm looking for? Pinpointing, you know, scrutinizing, that's the word I'm looking for, scrutinizing every single little part of his game, and oh, he doesn't do this, and he doesn't do this, or basically expecting an 18-year-old to make the right decision every time he gets the ball, to not be erratic, and to not play with freedom, you're an idiot. Like, I'm sorry, it's just a reality. Like, Nestor is going to frustrate, right? He's still going to have moments where you go, you have to pass the ball there. Like, what are you doing, man? Like, or why are you shooting there? Or why are you shooting from 40 yards, whatever. But to kind of, there are people, right, because I've heard people who sit there and kind of go like, oh, look, he's going to get the ball and he's going to shoot, and, you know, oh, like, who does he think he is and stuff like that. It's like, mate, this isn't an 18-year-old kid who's going out there, well, as far as I can see anyway, who's going out there and, oh, I got to get mine and I got to get my goals and stuff like that. I literally just think it's decision making, right? Like, there is no 18-year-old, if you can tell me the 18-year-old consistently in the A-League, or any league in world football for that matter, who makes the right decision every single time he gets the ball, like, again, you're going to be hard-pressed to find it. So, just, can we not, like, scrutinize a player who we all think is absolutely brilliant when he's at his best? Not scrutinize, like, heavily scrutinize, where it's like, why doesn't he do this? Why didn't he do this? Oh, when he goes to Germany, that's not going to work, etc., etc. Like, well, yeah, when he goes to Germany, he's going to learn. Like, he's going to learn, right? You do know that, you know? Very strange. And it's also strange when I hear that, when it's like, and Ben Garucci had a quote, I think, after the game where he talked about, you know, how Nestor's an X factor, and, you know, a lot of players at junior level are kind of taught to be robots these days. You know, you have to do this, you have to do this, you have to do this, and which is kind of true. And I've seen that, you know, I coach at a junior level too. So I do see that. And the thing is, it's like, it's funny, when we talk about the Socceroos, for example, and we look at the Asian Cup, and we go, we lack creativity, we don't have number 10s, we don't have guys who can break the game open, etc. Well, guess what? You've got an 18-year-old here who can do that. Now, you know, I'm not going to talk about whether he should play Socceroos, whether he should be capped. That's a different, you know, debate for a different day. But my point is, don't lose sight of that argument. Like, we need more creativity. So why would, if anyone's there, basically pinpointing and scrutinizing every little thing Nesta does? At the end of the day, what he is, as a sum of his parts, is exactly what our national team would need in the future, right? So, I don't really understand. It's like some kind of tall poppy syndrome, some kind of like, let's be negative because we have to be negative. I don't really get it. But like, you know, there's heaps of things this kid has to work on, right? But it's not going to happen overnight. And the basis of what he is fucking awesome. So like, just shut up. It's kind of my view on that. Okay, enough on him. Okay, the next game was City and Newcastle. Nil or draw, I watched this one. Quite closely, actually. Really, to be honest with you, as I was watching this game, I in the 60th minute I was watching, I just kind of felt, you know, I was kind of getting into, like, what the fuck are Melbourne City doing again? Like, they have to win this game. This is bullshit. Like, how can this be acceptable, etc., etc.? Honestly, by the end of the game, and when you look back after it, like, if this was probably played on a different day, like, they probably win. Like, it's just, Ryan Scott was, you know, on one. You know, he was having a fantastic game. And like the stats here, so, you know, they had 65% of the ball. You know they're gonna have a lot of the ball, but 19 shots, 9 on target. I don't have the XG, for example, in front of me, but like, it was a game where it wasn't just City are controlling possession and they're not really doing much with it. They definitely had a cutting edge to them, right? So in saying that, as I'm gonna get to later, the Wanderers won today. Sydney obviously won again. Like, they don't really have time for, hey, nice performance, but we didn't score and we couldn't actually put the finishing touch on it. Like, and really, when you look at their team, they don't really have the excuse to say, oh, you know, we weren't clinical today. Like, there's no excuse for the players that are out there. Like, they need to take their chances, okay? Now, weirdly, you look at that and you think, they're creating more. Oh, well, maybe Jay McLaren should come back in because, you know, now they're creating the chances that he would, you know, ordinarily finish. But I don't know. Like, Caputo's been good. I thought he was okay on the weekend again. And to be honest with you, like, if you ask me right now if Jay McLaren's going to be a Melbourne City player next season, I'd probably say 70% likely that he's not. Like, and that's based on no information, based on, oh, well, apart from the stuff that's already been out there before. But, like, clearly, there's some sort of issue there. Maybe it's had a greater impact on their season than what we think. And, you know, only now, really, we're starting to see a team which looks a bit more functional. Lecky came back off the bench. Let's see if he starts this game tonight against the Mariners. That'll be interesting. But, yeah, like, it doesn't get easier, right, for them either. Like, it's now the Mariners, and it's away too. Then it's the Derby. They've still got to play the Wanderers away. Second to last game of the season. So, look, man, like, it's, yeah, no guarantees that they're going to make the six. No guarantees. So, yeah, and the Newcastle side of this, so I just mentioned Ryan Scott before. This guy doesn't get, I think, the credit that he deserves, honestly. And with the whole Newcastle situation, let's just say Newcastle aren't a club or they don't have a team next season. Like, whether it's Newcastle or not, I think Ryan Scott needs to be starting for an A-League club next season, right? Like, he's been fantastic this season in a team that's been really poor defensively, as we know. And even going back to his Western United days, when he did play the odd occasion, deputising for Jamie Young, who was usually the keeper ahead of him at that time, you know, he was good. Like, he was good. So, he's a really solid keeper. I think Rob Stanton had some quotes about him after the game where he just kind of spoke about his character and what a good leader he is and stuff. Like, and you see it during the games, you know, and he knows that he's probably got a young team in front of him, which doesn't make it easy. But look, he's been a really good keeper for them. And I really think I'd like to see him stay in the league basically next season as a starting keeper somewhere, because I really think he could add value to teams, you know, fighting for the six or anything like that. He's a good keeper. So, yeah. And the other thing with them, one thing I noticed, and I don't know if any Newcastle fans out there noticed this too during this game, but I did not love the body language from Clayton Taylor. And look, I'm not going to, like, I know there's in sports media, there's people, there's pundits and stuff who, you know, they analyze body language and that, and sometimes it's just bullshit, like it's maybe just how players are and stuff. But when I say body language, I mean there were a lot of times in this game where basically Callum Talbot's driving with the ball, or he's getting beyond, for example, and Clayton Taylor's just not really showing an interest in defending, which I think was different to maybe the start of the season or weeks prior. And I don't know whether his mind's somewhere else, because maybe he's got a deal lined up to go overseas or something like that. We know there was interest in him, I think, from Scotland, if I'm not mistaken, in January. So, like, you know, you look at someone like Stamatopoulos, who probably has some kind of deal in the works, right? Like, I wouldn't be shocked, for example. Maybe someone like Moragas does too. Maybe there's... maybe not Mark Natter, because we know he signed a new deal recently. Look, I don't know. There's a few young players in that team who might have something lined up already because of the ownership situation, right? And that's fine. But if I was a Newcastle fan, I would not want to see any of you guys basically downing tools because, you know, the season's over and who cares. So, like, if anything, if, you know, if I was a fan of a club that was... whose future was up in the air, I would want to see my players basically giving absolutely everything, because it's like, look, guys, this could be one of our last games, or, you know, now we've got they've got four games left. So our last four games, you know, as a club, who knows, right? So I didn't love the defensive stuff with him in this game, because I felt it was kind of, it wasn't him, and I felt like maybe he was just kind of coasting through the game a little bit. So that was just one other thing I noticed, but yeah. Look, that's always kind of open to interpretation, right? So, yeah. All right. You know what? I'm going to take a quick break to rest my vocal cords. And when I come back, I've got a lot of thoughts on Sydney FC and the Mariners. Watch this game very closely. And then we've got the other three games as well, which I'll get through a little bit quicker. All right. I'm going to take a break, and I'll be back in a moment. All right. Coming back. Sydney FC and the Mariners, probably the game of the round in terms of the most interesting going into it, and probably the biggest result of the round, in my opinion, in terms of what we learnt, you know, and what we learnt is that Sydney FC are a fucking really good team. That's what I learnt, because, and you know, the pressing game, a lot's been made of it recently, obviously, and you know, I think Sydney FC have rightfully been getting their flowers even before this game, right? As a team which is really coming on. I think the Derby result was obviously very eye-catching in terms of that. But that's now twice against the Mariners, who we all rate, right? We all think are a great team. They've been fantastic under Mark Jackson. But the two times that Sydney have beaten the Mariners, these last two times, they're not just wins. Like, they're fucking beatdowns. Like, these guys are not just... like, they're taking their lunch money when they play them, right? Like, it's... yeah, it's not even close. Like, and as statistics for this game, like 27 shots, 8 on target for Sydney. The Mariners had 3 shots and 1 on target. I cannot remember the last time the Central Coast Mariners, Nick Montgomery, Mark Jackson coached, whoever, had less than 5 shots and less than 5 shots on target. Like, in a game. That's insane. And they just, simply put, like... the Mariners just can't deal with this Sydney FC press in particular. Now, not a lot of teams can, to be fair. Like, it's not, you know, well, let's not kind of say, oh, like, the Mariners are the team which has the real issue. Like, there's no real teams at the moment that can. I think, honestly, I think Brisbane, when they played Sydney recently, did a good job of actually trying to negate the press. They tried to kind of bypass it using their fullbacks, which I think was a good idea. But really, I've not seen too many teams since Talley's come in actually been able to play out, definitely in this last month, play out with actual success and actually keep the ball with success, right? Like, Sydney are just dominating teams without the ball. That's what they're doing. And not you know, like, you can control games without the ball in terms of sitting deep, absorbing pressure, playing on the counterattack, which is kind of what MacArthur do a lot, for example. But Sydney are controlling you, and they are controlling space. That's the main thing too. If you actually watch Sydney, I think I mentioned this maybe in another podcast, but whenever they go and press, look at the distance between their strikers, whoever it might be, whether it's Kucharski, Gomez, whoever it is, basically the player leading the press and the back four, and you'll notice how compact they are when they go and press. And that's about controlling space. It's a whole, It's a whole Red Bull thing. I'm not going to like get into it because it's, you know, rest defense and all this sort of crap, which is kind of hard to explain over a podcast. But the point is, like, the distances when they press, they are getting fucking spot on. They are compact when they press, which is like really important. So it actually means when you try and go in behind them as well, like they can actually catch you offside quite easily too. And there's still moments where it can get hairy because if one player gets beaten in the press, then suddenly the space that opens up, there's 2v1s which open up, all this sort of stuff. But on the whole, they press as aggressively as anyone in the league, obviously. They do it together and they're not getting beat. You know, like the individuals aren't getting beat when they go to make challenges and things like that. They're winning their duels. So when you do that, excuse me, when you do that and when you do it consistently, it means you're going to win the ball high all the time and you're going to basically start to play the game in the opposition's half. And the Mariners just, like, the first 20 minutes of this game, I kind of felt, okay, maybe the Mariners felt, look, they're at home, they're going to come out, they're going to hit us hard, let's kind of sit in, let's defend a little bit, and then maybe we'll play out from there. And I was just waiting for that moment, that 10 minutes of the Mariners to actually get some control and maybe assert themselves, and they just couldn't do it. They just couldn't. And they didn't match the energy, they didn't match the intensity without the ball, and I thought they were probably too passive at times when they did get the ball. And poor Max Ballard, for example, in this game, who I think has just been fantastic this season. Like, he is one of the most underrated players in the league. And there were a few times where he got caught pressing. He got caught by the press. But there's other times where he's on the ball. He's getting pressed by, like, fucking three guys, like, around him, right? And this guy's still, Ballard, is still, like, press-resistant and he's evading tackles. But it's just kind of like, you know, either there's moments there where the Mariners aren't releasing the ball to kind of evade the pressure quickly, or they don't have the confidence to maybe be a bit more direct in certain moments, right? Like, sometimes let's bypass the press, let's use maybe, you know, maybe it wasn't a game for Ryan Edmondson, maybe it was more of a game for Alu Kowal and his speed in behind, or Jing Reese, right? So that's something for Jackson, obviously, to mull over, I think. But I do think they've got a real issue against Sydney FC specifically. I think against any other team, I think they're fine. I think their style works and the way they build up works. The box midfield has worked fantastic all season. But against Sydney, it's now twice where it's not like it's like, oh, they had an off day. It's like, no. Like, I don't think they actually fundamentally know how to break out of this Sydney press. And like I said, I don't think many teams do. But if they, you know, it's like every team's got to have a curveball, right? So Sydney's curveball is their press. They've got, that's their thing that they do differently. If you look at Wellington, it's their ability to defend their penalty area. If you look at MacArthur, it's their counter-attacking game. You look at Victory, it's they've got probably the best, the most clinical striker in the league. So every team's got their curveball. I'm not saying the Mariners don't have a curveball, but I'm just saying against Sydney FC, if it's a semi-final matchup over two legs, they're going to have to find a way to get more success against the press. Again, it's some success anyway. Because at the moment, like, Sydney have got their number. That's the thing. And it's interesting because Sydney seem to have their number. And I don't think, I wouldn't say Wellington have Sydney's number, but that game recently, I thought Italiano kind of outfoxed Talay a little bit when they played in Wellington, and Wellington won 2-1. So, you know, I don't, like, there's kind of those three teams, as we'll get to later, like, they're my top three at the moment when we talk about teams in the A-League, when we talk about teams that are capable of winning the championship. And weirdly, it's like Wellington have kind of, they know how to beat Sydney, it seems, from the last time they played. Sydney easily know how to beat the Mariners. We've seen that twice now. Mariners and Wellington have got to play, this is what, it's coming up this weekend, right? If I'm not mistaken. Yeah. So I think Saturday. So that's a massive game. That's going to kind of tell us a bit more about how these teams match up potentially come finals time. So really interesting. But yeah, like, it just kind of seems like, these teams kind of all match up differently against each other, which you'd expect. They all play kind of in different ways. So really interesting. The tactical side, whenever Wellington, the Mariners, Sydney and the Mariners, Mariners, Wellington play each other, it's interesting because the tactics, the tactical kind of element behind it is always really good to watch. And then from the positive side, I guess from the Mariners' point of view, because there were some positives where I thought Brian Kautak and Dan Hall were like enormous in this game. Like, if they weren't sliding in, throwing their body in the way they did, I mean, Kautak almost somehow, that was ridiculous, like how he almost prevented that Joel King goal. And he's Jesus Christ, Brian Kautzak. If you watch this guy consistently week in, week out, it's just unbelievable. Like, he is a menace defensively. But without those two, man, that could have been way more ugly. And also, I think Bradley Tapp, I want to give a shout out, because I thought defensively he was excellent this game. Maybe not on the ball, you know, because the Mariners as a team collectively really struggled on the ball in this game. But man, defensively, he was throwing himself in front of things, doing everything that he could. So, you know, yeah, some positives there. But really, this was overall, like, this was kind of a reality check for the Mariners, right? And this is twice they've had it against Sydney. Ufuk Tale said after the game was their best performance, Sydney FC, since he's been at the club, which I probably agree with. Like, you look, they had the derby, which was obviously very impressive, and they had the other game against the Mariners, which I thought was impressive too. But really, when you look at it, this, probably he would look at it and say, probably because they kept a clean sheet, right? Like, so Sydney this season, that was the second clean sheet, I want to say, they kept this season. Yeah, the second clean sheet they kept all season long, which is insane to really think about, right? And basically, it's because I think probably he felt that this was the culmination of the pressing and the rest defense and everything kind of coming together and, you know, getting the goals and the reward at the other end to go with it. So, you know, people got to understand, I think, as well, like, to become a pressing team like this, this just doesn't happen overnight. Like, it almost feels like Tale kind of came in and him and Zrilic kind of overlooked it, and they kind of said, all right, let's do this. Let's do something different. Let's do something that no other team's really done with this really aggressive gang and pressing sort of approach. But to do that, we've got to get the players to work harder in training, and we've kind of almost got to do a mini preseason within the season, right? So that's why I think at the start, some of the results were a little bit hairy, because, you know, they were trying to really embed that style of play. And then as the weeks have gone on, like, they're just getting better and better and better. So now they've got to go to Perth on Wednesday, which is going to be interesting with the travel and how they manage the team. Can they keep up the intensity of the press for that game? Then they've got Newcastle. I expect them to win that. Wanderers, MacArthur, and Perth. They've got to play Perth twice. So Perth twice and Newcastle. MacArthur... as well, which I would say that they're better than at the moment, to be honest with you. And then they got to play the derby against the Wanderers, and we just saw in the derby what they did to them. So, like, all five of those games, they really could win every one of those games. I would not put it past them, right? So, does that mean that they could finish in the top two or something? Look, I don't know. It's kind of probably a lot of things that they're depending on to do that. But, yeah, they are absolutely flying at the moment. One other thing. So, Mark Jackson after the game. So, there was definitely a clear strategy from him after the game to really make everyone aware that don't define us by this performance, right? Because maybe he felt that everyone was going to come in and be like, look, the Mariners, kind of what I'm doing now, the Mariners just don't have it against Sydney FC and et cetera, et cetera. Now, let me be clear. I'm saying that the Mariners have issues against Sydney FC, but that doesn't mean that I don't think the Mariners are still a very, very good team. No, of course not. But, you know, he kind of spoke about, we're not going to kind of lose sight of what we're doing just because of one loss, and this won't define us, and we're not going to panic, kind of. He didn't say panic, but that was kind of what he was alluding to. And look, that's fine. That's all well and good. And you have to be process-driven. Absolutely. You have to stick to what you're doing. But I just think, to be honest, any team, not even just the Mariners, you need some kind of plan B. You need some kind of something different of the way you build up to kind of get around the Sydney FC press. Because, you know, playing out as the Mariners against, say, MacArthur or Perth, like a team who likes to maybe sit off a bit more, is very different than playing out against the Sydney team. And they know that. I'm not saying that they don't know that. But I'm just saying, like, whether it's a mentality thing that the players need to understand maybe better going into these games, the Mariners just seem to lack a little bit of self-confidence against the Sydney press. And like I'm saying, they could very easily meet in the semi-finals. They could easily meet in a grand final, right? So it's something that they have to have in the back of their mind, right? Okay. Enough of that. I could talk about pressing and, you know, all that shit all day. But next game was Knicks and Brisbane. So Wellington, literally nothing stops these guys, clearly. Like, there's injuries, there's all sorts, and, like, it just doesn't matter because I know Isaac Hughes, right, he didn't play yesterday. We had, obviously, Zavada. Don't know what's going on there. Looks like he might actually be out for the season, right? I think I read on stuff, I believe. They've got Tim Payne out, of course, as well. Like, basically, players are going down, you know, and there's issues there, but it seems to not faze them. Like, they're still getting results. It's kind of unbelievable. Like, you know, and this one, I was just watching before, refreshing myself with the extended highlights, and, you know, I think it helps when you score inside 2 minutes into a game, particularly if you're Wellington and you can defend your box really, really well. So that helps. But also, like, the incisiveness in transition with the ball, their counter-attacking game, I mentioned, I think MacArthur's maybe the best counter-attacking team, probably Wellington though as well. I probably didn't give Wellington enough credit there, but they just go. When they win the ball, they go. They're off, and if you're not ready, that's your problem. And, like, you know, they had Houston Salas now playing as a right back where he can play. I think when he was signed, I think a lot was made about the fact that he actually played there for Costa Rica at an international level. So he's one who can play as a six but can also be versatile and cover for Tim Payne at right back if need be. He looked fantastic in this game. Maybe got caught out a couple times defensively, but you've still got, you know, the great thing here about Wellington's squad is that they're still able to interchange some of the players' profiles, and it's not really an issue. Like, so Salas can go and play as a right back, and he can still do the same things that Tim Payne can do. So you're not kind of affected too much by injuries and suspensions and whatever. Rufus is obviously going to be out for the next game, which is, yeah, I mean, it's not ideal because they're playing the Mariners away. So now it's interesting because it's Mariners away and it's Victory at home. Now, Victory at home, I think, is a game that they can win. You know, even without a couple of these players, to be honest with you, I know maybe people go, oh, you know, but Victory, you know, they've got quality and stuff, but Victory, I've got a lot of trust issues with them, but we'll get to them soon. But Mariners away, there's no Rufa, there's no, obviously, Zavada, which, you know, they haven't had Zavada for a long time, to be fair, but there's no Tim Payne. And so, like, you know, the absences are piling up, and they've just got to continue to fight through it, really, and that's what they're doing. I mean, that's what they're doing. They could win that game against the Mariners and be 6 points clear. That's if the Mariners obviously win tonight against City. So, in terms of the premiership likelihood for Wellington, I wouldn't say it's like it's done or anything like that. Like, there's still four games, and if the Mariners win tonight, then that league gets cut to three. I would say, though, I mean, if the Mariners win tonight, then that top two kind of becomes very sort of 80% likely for me to happen. Yeah, like, so I think Wellington can feel very safe about finishing in the top two and you know, having that first week off in the finals. That's for sure. But in terms of the premiership, which, you know, I'm sure that they probably care about now, they're in a position where they can really make history for their club. So it's huge. There's still a little way to go. And looking at their run-in, look, I think after these two games against Mariners and Victory, they got Jets and MacArthur, and MacArthur's at home to finish. So I think you look at that and you think, if they get through this Mariners test with either a point or a win, like, I'd kind of put my money on them to see it through and actually take out the premiership, to be honest with you. So, yeah, this one this weekend is a massive premiership six-pointer, just huge. And you've got Wellington kind of banged up and trying to, you know, keep their momentum going and stay at the top even with key absences. And then you've got the Mariners who are going to come on like a freight train because they're going to be pissed because of that loss against Sydney. So it's all shaping up to be really interesting. I am 150% going to be watching that game, don't worry. And I will be excruciating everything. Anyway, Brisbane, just briefly, I don't really have much to say about Brisbane, to be honest with you. I'll just say that they had some chances in the first half. This game could have been different for sure. They didn't take them. That's what happens. This is the A-League. It's like any other league in the world. You don't take chances and you're going to get punished. So, and the other thing was in terms of decisions, red cards, things like that. So, David Ball had a high boot in this game. I think it was on Tom Aldred from memory. And that was not a red which, whatever, okay, whether it's a red or yellow isn't really the point I'm going to make here. The point was, Pat Wood, who got sent off, everyone might remember, for that high boot, you know, or just late kind of challenge on Adama Traore in the Big Blue earlier this season. Remember, that was a red. And you're telling me that's a red, yet this one from David Ball, where he did catch Tom Aldred quite high, to be honest with you, on the head, was not. And I just, yeah, the studs up, the late studs up sort of calls and scenarios that the A-League, the referees need to get a handle on this for next season, because there's many of them where they're just kind of, the guy's late, there's no intent behind it, it's just a little bit careless, and probably it's just a yellow, and they're getting called reds. And there's other ones where it's like, hey, he's late, like he's nowhere near the ball, and it's like, not yellow. So I don't know, it's something they need to look at for next season, because at the moment that area of the game is a little bit all over the place. And then Rufa got sent off. That one there, I don't, like, it looked like Rufa was pissed off because he felt that Henry Hoare dived. And so it looked like when he actually went to go get the ball off him, he had kind of gone in with a little bit more malicious intent, to be honest with you. So I'm not too annoyed about a red card being given for that one, but I could also see the argument for why, you know, it shouldn't have been too. So, look, Knicks fans aren't going to be happy with that. It means they're going to not have him for the Mariners game. It's going to be a big blow. But, you know, like, if there's any team I trust at the moment to deal with injuries and suspensions and stuff, like, it's Wellington. They've been just finding a way all season long. All right, two games to go. Two more kind of deep dives. Victory in Perth. I was at a family event, but I was able to kind of watch this one on my phone, cast an eye on it, just refresh myself with the extended highlights too. So a couple things from a Victory perspective from this game, who, you know, in recent weeks I've really been turned off by them. I just don't think they have enough, to be honest. I just don't think they're as good as some of these other teams we've been talking about, with Wellington and the Mariners and Sydney. But what they do have is they do have star quality. That's the thing. And if you got star quality in the A-League, you got a chance with every game you play. Sorry. and so Daniel Alzani deserves a lot of credit, because I thought he was excellent in this game. And more as the weeks go on, like, you know, with Victory, there's always a lot, you know, like there was that whole press conference Popovich had after the derby where he's asked about risk and stuff like this. Like, the thing about Alzani, it's similar to what I was saying with Irinkunda before with Adelaide. Like, he does give them something that they don't have with anyone else. Like, he is their best creator. He's the guy who can beat someone 1v1, create a space, right? Create a chance, turn inside, get a shot on goal. Like, he's the one who creates something out of nothing in that team. Like, I'm sorry, but that's... I don't even think Mishash is that type of player, honest with you. Like, Mishash is an excellent player. He's absolutely fantastic. But I also think he's kind of, like... Mishash is someone who plays well off someone else too. Like, him and Fornaroli have a great partnership. Him and Alzani have a great partnership. Alzani is someone who I feel, no matter who's out there, you know that he's going to be able to create. And he was excellent this game. He created both goals, really, because the first one, he makes a great run, little inventive back heel, just kind of in the direction of Mishash, and then eventually just works to Fornaroli. And the second one's a great cross, which Fornaroli just gets in between the two defenders and heads in. But... like, Alzani has to start. He has to start every game for Victory. Like, I don't, you know, and this is the thing about Popovich, where he's going to get in his head about maybe his work rate, or maybe he didn't train well during the week and stuff. It's like, listen, man, like, you need guys you can create. Look at, you've got Mishash, you've got Fornaroli, you've got guys who need to be fed, and Alzani's the guy that does that. It's simple. So, for me, he has to play. He has to play every week. And I know he has been, like, you know, but there has been some weeks where he hasn't, and there's been other weeks where he's been, like, subbed off early and stuff. And I think Victory fans have been annoyed some weeks, because it's like, hey, like, basically the things I'm saying, like, he's a guy who creates, like, we need him on the pitch. And the other thing is, like, there's Jake Brimmer too, who's playing deeper, but it's like, he's maybe not the same Jake Brimmer that he was when he won the Johnny Warren. So, like, Alzani's got to play. That's the main conclusion out of that game. And Fornaroli as well was back to being Fornaroli against Perth, which I'm sure Perth fans would love that. But point was, I was going to make here was, if Fornaroli is Fornaroli, and by that I mean early season Fornaroli, scoring the 4 goals against Newcastle, holy shit, get this guy in the Socceroos, what a player, and he's that clinical, then yeah, I will start to take Melbourne Victory a lot more seriously. At the moment, you know, like, we saw that on the weekend, so hey, like, this early season Bruno might be back, and we might see him finish season really strong, and I might have to reconsider a few things, but at the moment, I just can't trust them, because I don't feel there's enough goals outside of Bruno. I just don't. Like, so, you know, you've got Meshash isn't, yeah, we've seen, right? He's not really a big goal scorer. You know, he'll get his goals every now and then, but he's not a massive goal scorer. Arzani, if there's a massive criticism, is that he's just not scoring enough. He's creating a lot, but he's not scoring enough. And then you've got guys like Volupele and Fellaini and stuff, but they can contribute in you know, bit part, kind of every now and then I'll pop up with a goal, and it's not consistent. Even Economides, who's been, you know, pretty poor most of the season, had those 2 goals against Western recently, okay. And then, you know, well, he wasn't really required to score in this game. But my point is are we going to see another 2 goal performance from Chris Economides this season? I'm not really sure about that, right? So for me, they just don't have enough goals outside of Bruno, but it might not matter if Bruno's gonna, you know, be that clinical. So yeah, they're a weird team from that sense. I think the other thing with them which helps is, you know, hey, Tony Popovich, it kind of helps when you have two fullbacks playing on their natural side, and Jason Guerrier is actually playing as a right back, not having to play on his unnatural side or as a left back. And obviously Adama came back, so that helps, and he's playing on his natural side. Like, it's a small thing, but it really helps you in possession. And that was good for them to have him back. Ryan T came back too. He looked good. So yeah, I think Victory have to be content with where they're at. But I do think, like, they need someone to maybe just help Bruno a little bit with the goals as well. Perth, again, kind of similar to Newcastle and Brisbane, these other teams. Not much to say with them. I would just say a couple of players that I actually wanted to highlight who I thought were great. Jared Carluccio probably deserves a lot more credit for his performances. He's had a really good season, in my opinion, for Perth, and kind of has played with a bit of a point to prove. Like, maybe it's either, hey, when I go back to the Wanderers, I want to play, or actually, you know, I'm good enough to play in the A-League. Like, Perth, give me a full contract. Because, yeah, he's been excellent. And I thought, great assist for the goal, and even other stuff as well. He's just popping around. He's always kind of, you know, in the game, being active. Like, that's what you want from a player like him. And Daniel Benny as well got his first goal. And it's no coincidence that Daniel Benny got his first goal on the same week that Front Page Football released an exclusive interview with him. So, Daniel, no thanks required, man. Good. In all seriousness, good for Daniel Benny. Really good. I think he's deserved those rewards, right? I think he spoke about afterwards on the pitch about, you know, it's been a long time coming, and all that sort of stuff. So, and it has. And hopefully he can kick on and finish season strong. That's the thing with Perth, is I would say, is look, finals is it's, yeah, pretty much over now. And they've got Riley Warland. They've got Majeka Dunmi. They've got Daniel Benny. They've got Carluccio, I've just mentioned there. Jaden Gorman actually started this game too. Like, they've got a few young players there. Joel Nazmo, maybe we can see him start a game towards the end of the season. Like, just look at the positives. Look at what we've got going into next season. I'm sure Stan Lazaridis has obviously just been appointed as full director. I'm sure he's looking at that now. Like, where can we finish with... how can we finish with some things where we can look at some players going into next season and say, hey, this is a guy that we want to now, next season, really amp up his contribution to this team. So, you know, and let some of these young guys make mistakes, right, in these last few games. That's kind of the approach that I would take. So, yeah. All right. MacArthur and the Western Sydney Wanderers. Now, unfortunately, I was not able to watch this game today, but I was able to catch the highlights going back and read some other stuff up about it. Now, interestingly, if you look at this game at face value, in terms of just stats, you would say, look, MacArthur had 62% of the ball, 62%, sorry. They had 24 shots, you know, like, come on, like, surely was this another kind of papering over the cracks Western Sydney performance? Now, I saw some comments on Twitter and stuff, first half, like, people sort some Wanderers fans seem pissed off, like more of the same, etc. Like, you know, this team's really not getting better, all that sort of stuff. I mean, maybe that's true. Like, we got to see what they do next week again. The only thing I'd say is, at the end of the day, they've got back-to-back wins. Clearly, that win in Perth was huge for their confidence, clearly. Because you don't, it wouldn't be a confidence-boosting win if you just come up against MacArthur and just get done 2-0 and it's kind of nothing really happening, right? But if you go back and watch the highlights, my point, if you didn't catch the game, yeah, okay, MacArthur had 24 shots, but like, was there really much to them? Like, was there really a lot of actual goal mouth, like, oh man, how are MacArthur not winning this game? Like, I don't really think so. So I think the Wanderers deserve the win here, and I think MacArthur need to be careful a little bit. Like, they've been kind of cruising all season. They've done well, but you don't want to be looking over your shoulder, right, going into the last few rounds, because you've got Melbourne City who are obviously still trying to make finals. Like, someone's going to miss out of Melbourne City, Wanderers, MacArthur, Sydney FC. Like, one of those teams is going to miss out. So you don't want to be, you know, that team looking over your shoulder. So they got to be careful. But really, this game for me was not really about the teams or the coaches or anything. It's about one player, and that was Nicholas Milanovic. Holy fuck. Like, that's so holy fuck for two things. A, the goal. Holy fuck, what a hit. And B, it's just this guy, man. What a player. Like, what a player. He is. Nicholas Milanovic has to be one of the most underrated players and young players in the league. It's like, we talk about young players, Erin Kunda and you know, and I don't know, like Jacob Farrell, and like there's other guys too who we always talk about in terms of young players, like Alex Paulson, right? But Milanovic doesn't seem to be in that upper echelon of the conversation. But man, like, his performance has been consistent even through this period. Like, remember the Western game? That was Milanovic with that individual brilliance to open the scoring. Here, it's again Milanovic. Like, he, for his age, his ability to take games by the scruff of the neck and say, hey, this is bullshit. We're not doing anything. I'm getting the ball and I'm taking it and I'm putting this top corner or I'm putting this bottom corner, whatever it is. Like, he has an elite mentality. He's elite technically. He has unbelievable finishing ability. And the other thing with him, which I really love, like, there's a real fuck you about him. Like, there's actually like a real kind of, look at him celebrate the goal today. If you go back and watch it, he's like ears, cupping his ears to the crowd. He's like giving it to everyone. Like, there's a real kind of like, I'm gonna take this game over. I'm gonna let my performance do the talking, and I'm gonna make sure that you know about it. Like, you know, and when I see young Australian players behaving like that, and they've got the performance to back it up, for me, that's exciting. Like, I like that. You know, I want to see that. So that's good. He's been excellent. The assist as well for the Kittle goal was fantastic. Great vision. You know, he's got a lot of things to his locker and to his arsenal. And man, if they, at the end of the day, if the Wanderers do finish sixth or fifth, whatever it might be, in the make finals, I think they've, a lot of those players, a lot of those fans, they have a lot to thank with Nicholas Milanovic, because there's been crucial moments where he has stepped up and said, nah, like, I've got to do this for my team. So he's been excellent. And a side note, every time we talk about Milanovic, I have to bring it up. What the fuck were Western United thinking when they decided to swap him for Rami Nazarene? Like, I'm sorry. Like, has anyone at Western United, like, has anyone watched at Western United that game today and just thinking, like, what the fuck were we doing? Like, seriously? Basically, you let go of a guy who's one of the best young wingers in the competition for a guy who can't start games at A-League level and is barely even playing these days at A-League level, right? It's probably closer to NPL level at this rate, Rami Nazarene. And it's just kind of like, man, it's a bad deal. It's a bad deal. And it's aging worse by the week. It's aging worse by the week. So, yeah, nah, not good. Not a loser. Loser from this game, Western United's recruitment. All right. And, yeah, Hendricks, third goal, his first goal for the club, absolute quality, great team goal. And that's what I mean. So when I've been talking about the Wanderers recently, I've been talking about, on paper, top two team, top three team. Like, this is what I mean, though. When you see them have these periods where they're able to just fucking get on top of the game and score goals of that quality, team goals, combination play, everything that you want from your team in an attacking sense. Like, that's what we mean when we say, hey, Rudin, like, you got to get more out of this group of players, right? And they know that, obviously. But, like, it's one of the best squads in the league. It is. It shouldn't be six. We know that. And I'm not going to... Look, I'm going to give him credit for steadying the ship, getting two wins in a row, definitely. Like, credit has to be credit where credit is due for that. But at the end of the day, I'm not going to give credit to the Wanderers for their season when most likely they're going to end up finishing fifth, when really that's a top two team on paper. Top three team, maybe. If you want to be a bit more generous, on paper. So... And they showed in that 15 minutes of the second half like what they're really capable of. And I think the pleasing thing for Marco Rudin, would be that you think back to when they lost to Western United and they conceded one and they capitulated within 15 minutes. It's probably nice for him to see his team actually inflict an onslaught onto someone else for a change, right? That would have been really pleasing to watch. And, you know, three goals in 15 minutes and you kind of just said to MacArthur, like, you know, hey, we might have lost you last time, but we're coming back with a vengeance and we're getting the points. So he would have been very happy with that mentality, I think. So, credit to the Wanderers. Good win. I think probably more positives to take out of this game than maybe the Perth game. I still think that game against Perth wasn't great, but they got the win. And this one, maybe they would say it wasn't great, but they got the win. But look, it is the business end of the season. You got to get results. So slowly, they're recovering. Can they recover enough to make sure they make finals? We're going to wait and see. Did I mention their fixtures before? They've got Brisbane at home. Very winnable game. Like, this should be three wins in a row, right? They should be able to back it up again. Then they've got the Derby, which is a massive litmus test. And then it's Melbourne City and Melbourne Victory. They've probably got one of the tougher runs out of any team in the top six. So, you know, every win matters. Every point matters. And they've got to win the games. They have to win. So, this game against Brisbane is kind of like a must win. Right, because you don't want to go into the Derby with already all that narrative probably building going into that game of, hey, you already lost 4-1 to these guys last time. You don't want that coupled with you have to win this game, otherwise your finals future is in trouble, you know. So that Brisbane game's huge. That Brisbane game's huge. You can almost, like, I mean, seriously, you can make an argument that's bigger than the Derby in a sense that, like, they have to win that, right? Because like I say, you don't want the pressure. You don't want any extra pressure going into a Derby. So, yeah. All right. You know what? I'm going to take another break. And then when I come back, I'm going to give my first power rankings after round... What are we? Round 23? Round 22? Yeah. Power rankings coming up after this. Okay. Power rankings. I don't have an official name for this. I guess the official name is Power Rankings. Let's go through it. So I'm gonna keep this list. I'm gonna keep this list for next week when I do my review again, and we're gonna see how it changes kind of over the week. So let's go 1 through 12. So first on the Power Rankings, obviously the Knicks. Wellington has to be most consistent team all season, and you know there's still nothing yet that can change that. Second, I've got Sydney FC, and I just think they have to be second in terms of form teams right now. Like, there's a real statement factor to what they did on Saturday, and I think that means their positioning of when we talk about them in terms of title potential and all this sort of championship potential, like, it has a lot more weight. And I've got them ahead of the Mariners on the power rankings. And to be honest with you, like can you argue with it when you look at the two games they've both played against each other recently, and they've just both been so convincing for Sydney FC? So Sydney second, Mariners obviously third. Fourth, I've got Victory fourth, because I think, well, it's really just based on the weekend too. They won, MacArthur lost, so I think they're just ahead. MacArthur are fifth. Now, you can make a case that, like, you know, it's power ranking, so it's form. Like, maybe MacArthur should be below, like, the Wanderers or Melbourne City because, you know, those two teams have maybe been in slightly better form. I don't know. But I think MacArthur have been that consistent this season. I'm not going to kind of take them out of the top five in form teams, right, just yet. So they're fifth. The Wanderers are sixth, two wins in a row. I've got them just ahead of Melbourne City, who are seventh. And I think Melbourne City, like I mentioned before, you got to get wins on the board, right? You start getting wins on the board and you start to change the narrative heading into the rest of the season as maybe, hey, Melbourne City might be back as a threat come the finals. But those are are my top seven. So Wellington first, Sydney second, Mariners third, fourth Victory, fifth MacArthur, sixth Wanderers, and seventh City. And that top seven is basically the seven teams that realistically we actually care about going into the last four rounds, because the other five are kind of really out of it in terms of final contention and stuff. So yeah, that's the seven. Eighth, Adelaide United have risen, I guess. They probably would have been lower if I did this last week. So they've risen, obviously. They won 4-1. You have to give them the props. They've won two in a row. So, yep, they're up into eighth. Ninth is Brisbane, who have actually, look, generally, I think they've been good under Zakovic. They just haven't got the results to go their way. That's why they're ninth. Western United are still 10th for me, still ahead of Perth and the Jets because they've been a bit more consistent recently. They've shown a bit more about them, and I think they just had a bad night, to be honest with you, and they come up against an 18-year-old who's just too good for them on Friday in Nesta here in Kunda. So yeah, 10th for Western, Perth 11th, and the Jets 12th. Yep, the Jets bottom on the power rankings. I know they got the draw, I know it was a really hard 4 point, but they're just not showing enough for me to really put them above some of these other teams. I think Perth, you know, even Perth in that Victory game, like after Benny scored, there was like a 10-minute period where I was like, shit, like could Perth actually equalise and get back into it? But then they crumbled at the end. But and Victory kind of saw it out with relative ease. But yeah, I mean those bottom teams you can put in any order you like really, and you probably justify it in any sort of way. But yeah, it's a good way to kind of weight, I guess, how everyone's doing. So yeah, for me, it's Knicks, Sydney, and Mariners are still my three contenders at the moment. I still have them kind of ahead of everyone else. And then I have kind of Melbourne, Victory, and MacArthur in their own little kind of two-team bracket of, hey, if, you know, player X can play at his full potential, then yeah, one of these two sides can play at their best, can do some damage come finals time. With Victory, we're obviously talking about someone like Fortaroli, MacArthur, we're talking about someone like De Villa or Jermaine. And then the Wanderers and City are kind of in their own bracket again of, you know, pushing. Either one of them are probably going to finish sixth, in my opinion. And then you've got your rabble, basically your bottom five. So yeah, that's my power rankings. I'm going to keep this list here in front of me on my computer, and then next week for the Monday pod, I will review it, and we'll see. We'll see actually if any changes, anyone moving up, anyone moving down, what happens. So yeah, that was my first power rankings. Let me know what you thought of that. Let me know what you thought of the entire podcast, because I've been talking for what, like an hour and a half now, something like that. Well, no, I think an hour. It's 11:30 where I am right now on a Monday night. So yeah, we're officially getting into psychotic territory. But yeah, make sure you are checking out everything else beyond this podcast. Go onto the website, frontpagefootball.net. We are doing our best at the moment to get content to you on a daily basis. Let me have a look. Some recent stuff. I wrote a piece recently, which is always a rarity, but finally got some time to pump out an interview I did with Casey Werman, former Socceroo, who's actually coaching in Norway at the moment. Very interesting story that he's got, so you can go check that out. We had interesting pieces with an interview with Oliver Kellart, who is an Australian-born player who actually represents Sri Lanka, kind of similar to someone like Jack Hingett. So he had an interview with Cam Wiper recently and spoke about his kind of journey to representing Sri Lanka, so go check that out. And then you've got your more NPL-related stuff and NST-related stuff. We had a good story recently by Declan Mython on Tasmania's NST, the latest, I guess, with Tasmania having a second division team, so you can go check that out. And yeah, there's a whole bunch of other stuff. Yeah, so you know, make sure you're checking out, and make sure you're letting us know what you think about it. Same as this podcast, go drop a comment below. Let me know, do you want to see any special podcast episodes that you want to see? Like, we've done stuff recently talking about Dub or talking about LA United or whatever. We are going to do, I've got one already planned for this week in terms of a bit of a club deep dive, so we are going to do that. Just a plug there, but I'm not too sure for Wednesday, probably talk some A-League, but yeah, we'll see how the week goes, how we approach the Wednesday pod. But yeah, always open to any suggestions if any of you guys have something in specifically you want to hear. So yeah, and social media, Front Page Football, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, you know where to go. Go and hit us up, and yeah, have a look at all our latest posts, all the latest news, everything that we're trying to bring to you on a regular basis. Spotify, if you're listening here on Spotify the podcast, chuck us a follow. Also Apple Podcasts, you can go chuck us a follow there as well. And yeah, apart from that, there's really nothing else for me to say. That's been another episode of the podcast. My voice is slowly going, unfortunately. There's only so long that I can talk and listen to my own voice. So yeah, that'll do for the Monday episode of the Front Page Football Podcast. Hope you enjoyed my thoughts on the weekend of A-League action. If you didn't, I'm I guess happy to discuss, you know, whatever. If you did, let me know. Always happy to listen to some positive feedback as opposed to negative. Anyway, I am going on a tangent. That's been your host, Christian Marchetti. That's been the Monday episode. We'll be back on Wednesday with another episode of the podcast. Until next time, it's bye for now.